Three shots, four par, I just do two. One putt, par four, birdie, woohoo. New driver, info, replace, into. Par five, fairway, what you fin do? Think I'll try to get on into. Start right, good line, good view, Andrew.
Yeah, shoot a McGavin. 76 episodes. Bob's been on a few times with us before. Things are moving, Bob. Things are moving quite a bit at Squares Golf. Thanks for making some time for us. Appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy, but really appreciate you making time for us. Like, once every few months or so, we usually get a little hockey, a little golf chat in there. Oh. But things are moving. Bryce is moving right now. He's on a cruise ship somewhere in the Bermuda Triangle or something. I have not heard from him in a few days. So Jake's here. Jake's here. He's going to fill in. Jake's got an extensive kind of specifically with Spike's background. So he's going to be able to lend some to the chat here. But Bob, how are things? How's Squares Golf? How's things going?
Things are great. You know, last year was a good year, and we're excited about 2024. And, you know, it's fun, and it's a challenge to always reinvent yourself, to always come up with new technology and ideas, and then put them out and test them and see which ones are valid. And, you know, it's interesting that if you can design a shoe and pick up some performance gains, little performance gains in certain areas of the shoe, when you're done designing at the end of it, you can usually see some measurable gains because they all add up into something very positive. So I'm really excited about this year. And, you know, I'm going to make a very bold statement, and hopefully by the end of this, I will convince you guys that it's true. But I happen to think that we have built this year the best performing golf shoe that's on the market. I really believe it from a biomechanics perspective and from a literal performance perspective that we have built the best golf shoe that's on the market.
So in the past, Bob, when you when you say that, when we've chatted, one of our recent chats was right after, I think it was My Golf Spy went through and did all the rankings on those, and Squares finished up in third, I believe, in the overall ranking. So it was first, it's always kind of been the number one most stable golf shoe. Comfort's always been there. Mm-hmm. Traction, all of those things have always been there. So you mentioned like reinventing yourself. So have you changed much with this model? So we've gone, you know, the arrow, the bold, the speed in the past, and into the new model that's coming out in the coming weeks here?
Yes, yes. And I'll explain what I mean. So here's one of our new models. This is called the Speed 2. And it is the next version of our Speed. We look at things like the midsole in a golf shoe and to see how much energy return with the ground is captured by the midsole, because a lot of people build up a very thick midsole and they call it cushioning. Well, cushioning is another word for energy absorption. And so the last thing you want to really do is absorb a lot of that ground force reaction that you're creating with the ground. So you've got to find that very difficult balance of cushioning for comfort and then without absorbing a lot of energy or ground force. So we test this. We've been in test market for about a year and a half on this new EVA foam midsole. And, you know, it's got the right amount of cushioning now. It's got it's got some great energy absorption relative to the impact of your toes on the ground. But it's really designed for performance. So that's one area. The other area of the shoe is we look at energy loss in the shoe. And the greatest amount of energy loss on a golf shoe is on the lateral side of the shoe. And so you'll see a lot on the lateral side expansion. I don't know if you can see well enough here on here, but you'd see like an embossing here of a gear effect.
Yeah. I'll get a photo. So as you're explaining these, I'll get a photo and a couple clips and stuff that I can drop over. So when people are kind of listening to your voice, they can see it up close.
Yeah. So the gear effect here, we emboss that. When you emboss something like this, you really tighten the material in that area.
Okay.
And so this is what we call the modern day golfer shoe. It's got, as you can see on the back of the shoe here, all the way around it, it's got a carbon film. And so that provides a lot of structure in this area of the foot, coupled with up in the top part here, it with the gear effect, it reduces expansion. So the other challenge for, well, these are performance features. So if I can reduce expansion here, it sends the energy up. So that means you get good energy exchange with the ground instead of losing out the side of your shoes. Plus, if you're in a side hill, downhill lie, what you're going to do is you'll feel the shoe, actually your foot moving in the shoe and expanding in this area. And so to provide added structure in here is critical for side hill, downhill lies, uneven surfaces, and to reduce expansion in this area when you're, you know, hitting the driver. So there's a lot to this. And as you know, we've got printed silicone on the laces. And again, that brings the top of the lace down. I mean, top of the shoe down, secures it. You never have to tie the laces again. We've got a heel stabilizer that goes from the heel on the out external of the shoe down through the middle of the shoe. And it gives you great arch support. So we've got arch support. We've got a heel stabilizer. You've got the reduction and expansion here. You've got the laces. We made it a lot more breathable with this new lightweight material. And we knocked about 2 ounces of weight out of the shoe. So it's something that, as we look at a golf shoe, we'll rip apart shoes. We'll look at features, benefits. We'll look at materials. We'll look at their inherent nature of the materials. And again, it's to see where we can pick up little gains such that at the end of it, we have some great efficiencies.
So when you're talking about the design of a shoe, Bob, are you first? So I have a couple of questions about everything you just went over. The first one is how are you testing this outside of a physical human being wearing them on their feet? Because obviously, like, there's got to be some sort of product development before the product is physically made, right? So like, what are those steps? Like, what does that stuff look like? Is it a material search? Is it a technology search? Is it a little bit of both? Like, walk us through that kind of pre-process before a physical shoe is actually able to be held in your hands.
Well, you've got to understand the golf swing and what happens during the golf swing. And you've got to understand the amount of pressure that you create with the ground. So if some of the better players can create almost 2 times their body weight, so if they weigh 200 pounds, they can create almost 400 pounds of pressure. They measure that in newtons. So when you look at the structure of a shoe, it's got to withstand that type of pressure. And that type of pressure, you want to come vertically. You want it to come back and forth. And again, you do have that lateral motion too, that you'll shift your weight to the inside of your trail heel and shift everything back. But you want to generate that pressure with the ground vertically and then take that and move it and shift it. So you've got to look at materials that can withstand that kind of momentum and that kind of pressure. So I'm not a big fan of brands out there that have lightweight mesh-like uppers. If you can hold a golf shoe by the heel and the toe and twist it, throw it away. Throw it away. It cannot facilitate the golf swing. It is creating so many inefficiencies in your golf swing. And this is all measurable. Because if you have something that's literally expanding and those areas, your foot is moving in that shoe, the materials are giving, and it's creating inefficiencies. Because if I can, you know, it's kind of interesting, and I feel like I'm going down a rabbit hole here, but I listen to people talk about slicing the golf ball, and everybody will say, well, that's because your club face is open during when you hit the ball. But that's not why you slice the ball.
Yeah.
It's not why you slice it. That's the end result of, you know, you slice the golf ball because of weight distribution. All right. Now, somebody will say, well, it's because your arms are here. Your arms follow your body. So if your weight is too much in your toes, your heels, your left foot, your right foot, the inside, the outside, It is weight distribution that creates that face opening at impact. So again, when we look at shoes, we look at the structure of it. So we pick a material and we use the synthetic upper material that is used in soccer. And it's the number one material used in soccer. Well, why is that? Well, because they cut quickly and there's a lot of pressure put on that material back, forth, left, and right. Yeah. And we know that a golfer and their exchange with the ground and then the movements of getting the weight transfer from your trail to your lead side, that shoe needs to have the same amount of structure. So we look at that. Then we look at the midsole material, which we it's an EVA foam. And so we look at that and how much energy absorbed, how much cushioning, and we can measure that. We can put this through the rigors and we can measure that. And then we can develop a feel. And we'll do that testing that we'll walk on these things. We'll play golf in these things and we can test and find. We can also do, you know, they call it short D measurements and things like that about the, you know, the responsive nature of the material. And we do all that stuff. So, and then unlike the outsole, we look at traction. So this is an AI developed traction pattern. All right. Now there's over 290 points of contact on the bottom of this shoe. Now, what does that mean? If you look at this, it's got removable Pivx cleats. We've got six on each foot, and those cleats are strategically positioned on the bottom of the shoe where the greatest amount of pressure is exerted. And then what we do is we supplement those with traction lugs at different heights in a rotational pattern. So all of this together is something we look at traction, we look at the elements, we look at side hill, downhill lies, we look at wet surfaces, and we try to build a traction pattern that can survive in pretty much all types of terrains. So there's a lot of thought that goes into every element. We look at breathability. We look at waterproof. Now, again, little nuances. So we're one of the only companies that sew the tongue and the inside. We sew a gusset all the way from here to here on both sides of the tongue. The tongue won't move, but the most important thing is most of the rain gets in from it coming down on the top of the shoe and working its way in through the tongue. So we sew the gusset so no sand, no water, nothing can get in. So this shoe is literally waterproof all the way up to here. Oh, so wow. we look at all of this. We've got the footbed, the insole in there, and we look at cushioning. We look at where the cushioning is needed. So there's so much that goes into the design. It's fascinating, but you can look at it as separate components. And how do I improve those components? And then you look at how it all comes together and to make sure that it all produces a better product.
So is there any way to, like, I don't know what the right word for this is, but is there a way that you're able to do some of that work digitally? Or do you just have to start making combinations of traction and soles and materials and, like, you know, work baby steps up physically? Or is there any way you can do that work digitally or with any sort of, like, you know, intelligence or anything like that before you have to start sewing material together?
Yes. Yeah. And we do a lot of that. So, there's a lot of know-how. So our designer, he spent the last 25 years in cleated sports, just cleated sports. He worked for Reebok, New Balance, Puma, and his last job before he came here, he was the director of innovation and design for FootJoy.
Very cool. That's awesome.
So, you know, he's got all of this years of designing, whether it's baseball, football, soccer, anything with a cleat on it, he's designed it. So there's a lot of nuances that you learn and, you know, you implement as you progress.
Yeah, that's super cool. Cause, like, I'll talk to, you know, I have a pretty close relationship with the Tuons, and I've talked to Sean Tuon about something like that. And I've asked him, like, you know, When you draw a putter on a napkin, like, it's a cliched example, but, like, when you draw a putter on a napkin, like, how do you know that that's going to work? And he's like, I've been doing this so long, Jake, that I can write something down or think of something in a notebook out of my head. And he's like, I can tell you within 5 grams how heavy it's going to be when I make the first one. He's like, yeah. And I can tell that just off of a picture that I drew in a notebook. So it's like, that's cool that those people exist, right? And that you've obviously found one that's been in the industry for a long time. That's awesome to have. Mac, are you good if I keep firing away here on questions?
Well, I was going to, if I can jump in for 1 second. So you mentioned the designer, you spent 25 years in foot, where I've spent the last 10 minutes reading up on EVA so I could find out what it was, because that's how my brain works. So I'm back. If anybody was wondering if I just left, no, I'm here. It's a ethylene vinyl acetate. So definitely something that my brain works that way. So I'm hoping a listener's works the same way. So EVA foam is something similar to like what you're going to find in Crocs. It's so I guess Phil Knight was one of like the originators of it, or like the first person to get it into a shoe. So Phil Knight's obviously from Nike. Most people know that. So,
Phil Knight's designer.
Right. Right.
Let's give a little guy some credit.
You know, that's an interesting point.
Give him some credit here. Let's not just pump Phil Knight for his money.
Right. Right.
You know, Phil Knight, a very interesting story is Phil Knight in his book, The Shoe Dog, talks about one of the critical elements of footwear design is opening up the toe box.
Right.
So it's allow your toes to splay. And splay means to open a
spread. Okay. Right.
Now, when you think about a runner and they land on their toe, their foot naturally wants to spread. All that pressure down wants to spread. And if you're angling the toes to the center of the shoe, which most every golf shoe does, and by the way, Squares was the first and the original to open up the toe box. If you have your toes angled into the center of the shoe like this, the only place they can go is round under. But with our toe box, and again, one of the misconceptions of our shoe is that it's a wide shoe. All right. Mm. It is not a wide shoe. So think of the shoe in two areas. When you put your foot into the shoe above the outsole. So if you look at this shoe, you can see the outsole hanging over here. All right. So when we say we widen the base under the ball of your foot, all we did is added more rubber here. We added more of this on the outsole such that you've got better balance and stability under the ball of your foot. But up in here, it's a normal D-width shoe. And when you establish width in a shoe, it's in the ball of your foot, right in the ball of your foot on the greatest width. That's where a D width is established. You need an E width, you get a wider foot, double E, so on and so forth. Our shoe is a normal D width, but what we did is from where the point is measured for width all the way up to the end of your toes, we just opened up that toe box. So it's not a wide shoe. We just gave you more room in the toe box. Now, what does that do? It gives you better balance, better stability, and allows your toes to splay. And it will give you a better sense and feel for the ground. And then with that, we were able to widen the base under the ball of your foot. And that, too, will give you better braking, better balance, better stability. But now the overall surface coverage of the ground is greater. And so now you have better energy exchange with the ground. Now, back to your point, Jake, is that all of this stuff is measurable. We can put you on a pressure mat. And in fact, our testing is done by Terry Hashimoto, who's a fellow Canadian, and he lives in PEI, and he was a co-inventor of BodyTrack. And so I can put you on a pressure mat and I can see where your weight distribution is just by, you could be on with your current shoes or put our shoes on. We can see weight distribution. We can see newtons of pressure that you create, how much of that pressure you create initially, how much you use when you're hitting the ball, how fast you move the weight from the trail to the lead, which is the key in hitting the ball a long way. We can measure your trace line, which is, you know, where you're moving, your balance, your stability. We can measure all of that. So when we test things, we always want to make sure that any change we make helps the golfer play better golf. And we can measure.
Mac here from Manscaped. Gentlemen, our friends over at Manscaped have been working night and day to bring you a below-the-waist grooming experience like none other with their brand new Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. We're talking about a next-generation trimmer with interchangeable blade heads for whatever shave a mind can imagine. AI is cool, but I think this might be the best technology advancement the world has ever seen. Upgrade your grooming game to the Ultrasphere this year by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping using the promo code OTSGolf. High tech for low prices. Manscaped OTSGolf for 20% off plus free shipping. We'll see you in the Ultrasphere.
Very cool. So I just kind of wanted to round off my point because, Jake, when you asked the initial question of like kind of the R&D of the shoe, if you will. So the EVA foam midsole specific is like, it's pretty cool if you dive into it, if you're interested. Maybe I'll try and remember to link it, but like you can get some pretty cool information of like how it's essentially like just beat up on a hydraulic press over years. And now there's more ways of modernizing it by, you know, injecting these like compounds and whatnot into the shoes. But it's kind of neat how that like works to be able to create like that substance. So if anybody, everybody would know Crocs. So like the middle of the square shoe is going to feel a lot like the Crocs would right now. Is that right, Bob? Is that a good explanation?
I'm not familiar with Crocs. I don't think I've ever worn a pair, but that's you good. Know, you would know,
you're all
you
right
know, then. The name, like Adidas calls it Boost.
Yep.
You know, and everybody comes up with their own name for it, proprietary name, but it's EVA and it's a foam. Now, a fair amount of people don't use it, even though it's it's the best to use in a midsole, I would say, from my opinion. All
there's no doubt in 15 minutes of research that it is the best midsole that you can put together.
But I can tell you this, that it adds quite a bit onto the cost of a pair of shoes. You'd be surprised.
Okay.
From a cost of goods perspective, it takes the shoe up almost a dollar from a cost of goods.
Is it like based on kind of what I was talking about, like the work that needs to be put into to kind of, because there's different, like there's polymers and a lot of different things that we can get into that I've done in my 15, I've learned in my 15 minutes of research. But if you, it's just like more, there's more involved in it than just a typical rubber that you're going to put on a shoe.
No question. And everything has a responsive nature to it. Everything has a degree of cushioning, energy absorption. You've got to look at these materials. Sometimes you take a baseline chemistry or a polymer and you can change the characteristics of it. And, you know, you can make it harder. You can make it softer. And again, it's all the testing to find that delicate balance of the energy exchange with the ground and cushioning relative to comfort.
So Bob, how is it lighter than this one? You said it was 2 ounces lighter. I assume that compound, with it being one of the new developments in the Squares line, that's attributed to it being less.
That pulled out about an ounce of weight.
Right. Yep. So that right there is like a contributor to making the shoe lighter. Did you find in like some of your feedback, some of your customer feedback, some of your testing that the shoe was, that it needed to be lighter?
You know, it's one of those challenges. The answer is yes. We launched this a little over 4 years ago, and it was kind of the peak of that lightweight sneaker-like material. So everybody was after this spikeless, lightweight sneaker-like shoe. And I think it was really driven by the fact that people didn't feel that the cleated product was comfortable. And you can't have comfort in cleats, which we've all proved to be incorrect, is that you can have both. But the interesting thing is that as this peak was going on with this lightweight sneaker-like stuff, we were having people say, hey, can you know, we find your shoe to be heavy. Now, we're in about a 17-ounce range, and the Tour 360, the Pro SL, a bunch of the G-Foot Galavanta was heavier. But one of the things is that, think of it this way. If you take weight on one side and structure on the other. Is if you take and you want to increase structure in a shoe, you increase weight. You want to reduce structure, you take out weight. And so when we talk about structure and the materials we use on the lateral and the medial side, you can't twist this shoe. And the structure up in here is second to none. And so you're going to have to put weight into the shoe to give a golfer better performance characteristics. Now, I really believe, and I have no trouble saying this, golfers were sold a bill of goods with those spikeless, lightweight, sneaker-like shoes.
Yeah.
They were sold a bill of goods.
I have learned as much recently. Obviously, my information, like admittedly, is slightly biased because it's literally a spike company, but I've learned a lot about it from a technical point of view, and that actually kind of leads me into Mike. Did you had something else? I don't want to cut.
No,
you
go ahead. You're good. I'm good.
So one of the specific questions I want to ask you is, like, I tell people a lot that I think the selection of spike that you play on the bottom of your shoe is very similar into how you select a club grip, where the one that comes on your shoes is not the one you're stuck with. First off, that's a huge misconception. And secondly, there's different needs for different types in different situations, even, right? Like, it can get pretty hairy that way. So walk me through a little bit of your philosophy of A, everything is spiked, you don't have a spikeless option, and B, for the new one, why you chose to go 6 spikes. Like, you kind of hinted on it that's the most mm-hmm. pressure, but, you know, there's some spikes that have 9, right? Like, 9 is a very common number. Right. Yep. So why'd you go 6, and why'd you pick Pivx as the kind of like stock option for the shoe?
You know, I have seen, I'll start with the Pivx. Back when we started this, I tested a lot of the spikes, and I just saw, and I had a personal preference of the Pivx. I just saw better connection to the ground in different situations. I would say it this way, that I don't think, and I'm not saying this because you're on this call, but soft spikes make a bad spike. I don't. Yeah, but
it's situational.
Exactly. The design of our shoe and the supplemental traction. So I'm going to answer your questions in one fell swoop here. Is that so? With our traction pattern and the supplemental lugs, we don't need to put 9 cleats on here. We want to give you traction in the greatest areas where we see the most of pressure exerted on the ground. So if we can do that, that's where you need the greatest amount of connection and traction. But then we can supplement, and all of these nubs are at different heights, and they start around the cleat at almost the same height, and then reduce and expand in certain areas. But again, we didn't need to put 9. The more you put, you're going to need to rotate your foot during the swing. It's got a natural rotation, particularly on your trail foot when you want to rotate mm-hmm. it up onto the toe. Your front foot is going to rotate slightly. You can't just cement your feet into the ground. You've got to have some kind of movement.
Yep.
So traction can be accomplished with this kind of dual traction pattern. Now, again, the Pivx at the time, we found to just test out in this design, in our AI design traction pattern, it tested out the best, and the nuances were very slight. I'll be honest with you, very, very slight, but I had the preference of this. I will tell you that the new spike that's out there, the one they're pushing the hardest on, yep. you know, I've heard things about, you know, greenskeepers aren't too happy with some of them, and I've heard some things, and, you know, so look, you know, you've got to be careful, because although you want to design and you want to provide track, you got to be careful about any kind of extenuating circumstances that can hurt the brand. So we look at all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, so like to me, it's very comparable. Like PIVX to me is such a, it's a meat of the bell curve spike, which I think is why it's so great for like a stock option on a spike. Cause I think a lot of people are going to find plenty of traction out of that spike. And then if somebody decides that they need more, they have options to go to if they need more, right? It's nobody's going to say they want less. I don't think. I think that would be a weird situation for people to say they want less traction out of their shoes. But I think if, like, you know, if somebody needs more or ends up in like really crazy conditions, like, A, that's just in general, like that's part of the decision to go to a replaceable spike instead of going spikeless, right? Like you don't have that flexibility with spikeless. I mean, and yeah, obviously, you know, there's a myriad of other problems with spikeless, but for me, that's a big one. Like I like to be able to change things if I need to, and just at least have the option to do it. And I have like my shoes now that I'm playing, when I go play outside in like normal conditions, I have two sets of spikes now on mine, mm-hmm. where I put PIVX in the trail foot toe, and then I use Tourflex Pros pretty much everywhere else. And it's nice because it gives me that rotational ability without feeling stuck. Because mm-hmm. I went to it wasn't before Tourflex Pros, I was in something and like it just felt like I was stuck, right? Like I loved the amount of connection I had to the ground, but it was like I couldn't. Everything was up down, right? I had no lateral ability and it felt like my ankles were very constrained. Like there was no rotational ability in that. So mm-hmm. it's cool that you say, like, you know, part of this process is testing that out and making sure that what you offer somebody out of the box is tested. It's going to work. It has a point for, like, you know, your answer could have been and might, you know, be, you could have been like, wow, that was the cheapest thing we could throw on it, which you know, the difference in spikes is, you know, it's not that yeah. much anyhow, but like, it's nice to know that there's, you know, there's R&D behind even something as simple as like, what spike are we going to choose from a brand?
No question about it. In fact, when I started the design of this shoe, I went to the designers and I said, I want you to build me the most expensive golf shoe you can build me. And they almost fell off the chair and they both told me that it's the first time anybody ever said that to them. Because what happens is they go out and they design a shoe, they hand it off to the marketing guys and they say, well, we're going to price it out here. So I need you to take this out, that out, this. And they start taking things out to hit cost. So I figured if I went to them and said, I want you to build me the most expensive shoe, they'd put the best components in, they'd put the best of everything in. And that's what I was after. So, you know, the spikes are very important in a shoe. The traction pattern is very important. And, you know, I'm not a fan of a spikeless golf shoe at all. And I think it has really hurt the game. And I believe I can prove that. And I was looking at statistics of the average of the last 10 years of the driving distance of a Tour Pro. And I think the average driving distance has only gone up about 7 or 8 yards in the last 10 years, you know, over that period. And I think it was, the numbers were from last year. I think My Golf Spy published that. The driving distance, and Arcos did a test of double-digit millions of swings, and they looked at the last 5 years, and driving distance went down by a half a yard. Now, why? Think about that. How is it possible the driving distance went down by a half a yard with all the innovation in shaft technology and clubs and head technology and grip technology and ball technology and all that?
Yeah.
Now, I believe that when you analyze somebody's golf swing, where does distance come from? It comes from your interaction with the ground. And that's where swing speed is created. It's your interaction with the ground, how much pressure you put on it, and then how much pressure you use during the swing. And the difference between the two is what we call postural control, which is a fancy word for stability. Stability means controlling your body throughout a motion. So if I can control your body consistently throughout a motion, you will hit the ball straighter and farther. But I contend that the loss of distance was because spikeless golf shoes got up to about 60% market share. And now it's in the last couple of years, it's fallen backwards. It's starting to come back down because of the lack of structure and performance of those golf shoes. I contend that's why the average golfer is losing distance.
I contend some of us are getting a little bit older, Bob. All right. So speak for yourself, but some of us can't swing the club as hard as we used to be, but
that is true. You know what? But you know, pro golfers, they'll tell you this, that the clubs are regulated. The shaft is regulated. The ball is regulated. You know, they want to roll back the distance on the ball and this and that. Where do they find distance from? Where do they find it? They find it from using the ground better. Yeah, and, yeah. You know, it's the same thing every time that they talk about is how do I use the ground better now?
Yeah, I'm just giving you shit, Bob. Like I've been lucky enough to have that conversation with Terry Hashimoto and explaining. So back in the archives of the pod somewhere, Terry came on, chatted with us about Square specifically and the body track, Matt. He's, I believe he's like the inventor of the body track, right?
Co-inventor, yeah.
Yeah, so he was explaining. So we've had Ryan Holly on the past, one of the best minds in golf with the Swing Catalyst map and like talking about the different placements and spikes and stuff. And Terry did a lot of the R&D for Squares and the specific components and the specific placement of the spikes was where our feet are having the most pressure points on the ground throughout the golf swing. So that's why some of them might have nine. Some of them might have less. Some of them don't have spikes at all. But from Terry's research and what he backed through the Squares development, like the R&D that you guys put into it, those were the six most generated pressure points on the foot through the golf swing. So I think that kind of like answers Jake's question a little bit. But I do think like as a consumer, we like the ability and everybody is starting to exercise the ability to be able to swap things in and out. So having a good stock option, I said this to Joshua Haywood when I was looking at their wedges one day for like a buddy of mine, they have like the high rev 2.0 Jake. So this is your world, right? Pretty decent like stock KBS shaft. It's like a, you know, they have a couple other options that go in there too. And I said to him, I was like, that's a great option to be able to give as your stock to a lot of people who just want to like pick up a wedge and maybe they aren't going to know all their specs or what shaft they're going to use if they use an S400 or whatever it may be. So I think having the Pivix in there is something that's a really good starting point for golfers that they're going to enjoy that. Like when they put on that, it's not going to, first of all, it's not going to be uncomfortable. Like you said, Bob, it's not going to tear up any of the greens or anything like that, which truly I think is just people like recognizing where they are and walking with a different, you know, you walk around the hole. Sometimes you see like marks all around the hole and stuff like that. That could be in soft spikes. That could be in like Birkenstocks. It doesn't really matter. If people are going to walk like that, they're going to tear up the green. But I think like the Pivix is a really good option. That's really comfortable for people, really comfortable for golfers. And that will allow them a good starting point. They can develop even further. And that's a great thing about having a pair of Squares on is there's not much more technology that we've heard of into a golf shoe than what you guys have put into it. So having that option to kind of move those things out is great as well.
I want to show you another shoe that we're launching. And this one is the culmination of almost 2 years of testing. And it's been tested with Long Drive Champions. It's been tested on the PGA Tour. And this is what we call the Velo. And it is a really good looking shoe, but there's so much science in this. So if you can focus in. Remember I was telling about the energy, greatest amount of energy loss is on the lateral side.
Right.
All right. So the objective in golf footwear is you hope to make the foot one with the shoe. And you don't ever want the foot to be moving in the shoe, ever. So some of the critical components, although it's not talked about a lot, I would tell you that the lacing system and bringing the upper down on the top of your foot to reduce the foot moving as important as the cleats and traction system. Because if your foot is moving in the shoe, it creates so many inefficiencies. You get stuck on one side or the other. And so with this shoe, this is the first ever speed rated shoe. So when you think of shafts, when you think of golf balls and speed rating and This is for the guy that swings over 100 miles an hour.
Oh.
So this is something that anybody with a high swing speed, well, you know that, quote, they can, they're swinging out of their shoes. They can't be able to swing out of their shoes. Mac
doesn't have to worry about that.
Because this here is a material, it's a proprietary material that's, it's almost what titanium was to metal woods.
Oh.
It's lighter and it's almost like a film. But what it does is it reduces the expansion in this area. But then as you can see on the top of the shoe, the material comes up and it has these very unique lace keepers. And so this is what we call the lace lock system. So this is an integrated system here that as you pull this, these laces, it brings the upper material down comfortably. This expands just on the top portion right in here. So it forms to your foot. So now that energy is being directed upwards. So it's directional energy. We can measure via heat mapping how much energy comes out the side of your shoe. And we can take, and by doing that, we can reduce it. And what it does is it sends it up and down vertically instead of out the side of your shoe. So this is for anybody with a high swing speed. It's somebody that plays on terrains that have, like in Ireland or wherever, that is very hilly, very, very, you know, uneven lies, because your weight, if you're a heavier person, you know, above say 200 pounds, you put a lot of pressure on the side of that shoe, you know, when you're standing on an uneven lie, and that shoe is giving. And so we sought out to provide a performance golf shoe for those people who have elevated swing speeds and tour pros.
Speaking my language there. That's
and
really cool.
And people like me over 200 pounds and can't hit a fairway and are constantly on uneven.
Yeah, that's why you don't meet the swing speed requirement, Mac.
Right. That's why we sent Bryce a pair of squares and you a pair of true links. We don't want you wearing our shoes. We only want good players.
Oh.
Ask Bryce where the cash comes when Bryce and I play. His handicap can be whatever it could be. I don't keep track of that stuff anymore, really, but put a couple bucks on the line and I'll take it down. No problem at all. But
yeah. A new guy shows up and you put a couple bucks on the line, right?
You know,
so, Bob, when you talk about those laces, what's your opinion, if you have one, or like just thoughts on stuff like the BOA system, right? Like the BOA system, like that's kind of the theory of the BOA system, right? Is like even pressure coming down on the top of your foot. Am I wrong there? Is that something that you guys looked at? Did you try it? Did you think about it?
I did. Now,
because I hate
like 4 years ago, BOA had two different types of systems, and it really didn't do a good job of pulling the upper and the top part down.
Okay.
We looked at it and it was creating buckling in the material at the time. I will tell you this, that they've gotten a lot better. They've gotten a lot better, but I am not a fan of them. I'm not a fan of that system.
Gotcha.
I think it's the way that it pulls in and pulls down. I just, I think it puts a little stress, a little pressure on some points of the foot that you don't really want it. And, you know, I could tell you that from just personal observation. I haven't done literal testing on that, but I was never a big fan. Plus, it was adding a fair amount of cost to the shoe.
Yeah,
and we sought out a better way to solve that problem and at a more affordable price.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Yeah. One of the things, Jake, if you haven't worn the shoes, we'll get you into a pair. They're the laces are, it's unique, and it's like, it's kind of as soon as you pull it tight, it's there. Like obviously you're going to loop it, swoop and pull, you're going to do all the other good stuff. But when you pull it tight, the foot is just secure. It's incredibly secure in the golf shoe. Like it's.
Yeah. So we print silicone on the top of the lace. So when it comes through the eyelet, it kind of locks it in place.
Oh, that's super cool.
And you shouldn't have to ever tie your shoe again throughout the round.
That's awesome.
I had my pair around here somewhere. I don't know where they are. A pair of laces around here somewhere, but Jake, I'll show you them. It's cool. Like when you, it feels like when you kind of first like tighten up that boa system and then it just like, just, it's just there, just doesn't, it grips it, doesn't let it go. It's really neat. Bob, can we talk about the, if we got a few minutes, can we talk about the team a little bit? You got some expanding members of the team. So can we go through kind of some of the players you guys, that Squares has in the lineup right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's today's a good day. We just did a press release. We, let me back up. We, you know, we've got Sir Nick, who is, you know, our icon. He's been with us now for about 4 years. And David Duval, it's just kind of, he fits that mold for us. I am sad to say that Sepp Straka is no longer with us. We were negotiating a contract with him. And, you know, after you win a couple of times, you play in the Ryder Cup team, the price of poker goes up. And, you know, he's a good guy, great to work with, but they all have agents and, you know, their agents get paid on the deals they do. And so it's unfortunate, but, you know, the way he's playing, maybe he'll be back sooner than we thought. But but one of the areas that I focused on, you know, we've got Mark Halkovec, David Duval. And, you know, when we look at our demographic, it's a male above the age of 40 and they resonate with those type of guys. We are in discussions right now with two gentlemen, one who has won on tour. He's be playing in the shoes next week. Another one was sent a pair today, and you will know both of them. I just can't reveal it right now because I'm not sure we'll sign both or either or. Yeah, we're going to have I'm excited to get, there's one in particular I'm excited to get. And, I think it's going to happen. But one of the areas I focused on when I started this is the closest per, when you think of the pyramid of influence in golf, everybody says it's the tour pro, the Tiger, the John Rahm and all of that. And that's what gives you that presence and that validation. And, you know, then underneath that is the instructors out there, the icon. They say they're the closest to the golfer of anybody, you know? And so I focused on instructors and we just did a press release today. We just signed David Ledbetter. And we've got Jim McClain, Rick Smith, David Ledbetter, Mark Immelman, Bobby Clampett, Todd Kolb, some good young guys like Jake Thurm, Taylor Crosby. But we've got a portfolio of probably over 30 of these very, very good, qualified, legitimate instructors. These aren't the guys online and selling lessons for $6.99, you know. These are the true, and these guys spend their whole life trying to help people play better golf. So when they endorse a product, they'll take the product, they'll play with it, they'll wear it all day, they'll do testing, they've got all the sophisticated equipment, and they'll put it through its paces.
Yeah, that's kind of like, that's very aligned with kind of your Squares mission, if you will. Like that makes a lot of sense to me, knowing you for a few years now, kind of the way that you discuss the brand and having some of the world's top instructors wearing it and endorsing it and playing in it. Another kind of world that you've touched in is like the World Long Drive too. And there is a huge uptick in World Long Drive, along with like the, all of the analytics that are going into the, you know, the long drive world, the long drive swing. There's a huge market for like pressure mapping and stuff like that in the World Long Drive. No, so I assume that, yeah, I've seen quite a few players hitting in Squares. I assume like there's a couple that are on your team. But is that something that you're starting to, a path that you're starting to look down to a little bit, Bob?
You know, I really haven't placed a lot of emphasis on that. I tell you, I've met some great people who are out there doing that, and it's fun. It's a great part of the game that I think a lot of us like to watch. And I don't think many of us can relate to those people. They're freaks of nature. I mean, the swing speed, the ball speed, the distance they hit it. I mean, it's hard to imagine somebody hitting a ball that far. And You know, it's interesting. Last year we had Connor Kay, we had Kelly Rutney, who's Kelly is from Canada up there. She yep. won the women's division. We had Justin James and Kelly, and then Connor. Connor won the junior. She won the women's, and you know,
Justin,
it was
Justin
fun.
Battled that weekend too. Yeah,
yeah, and Justin, yep. you know, it was fun to have three trophies in that one event. People wearing squares, but again, it's. I don't know how much people really can relate to those people because of their talents, and you know, in some cases, they're using longer shafts, different types of clubs, and mm-hmm. and so. You know, I'm a big fan of it. I'll support any player. We probably have 10 or 12 people out there wearing, but it's not like one of the areas that I'm focused.
Yeah, I just noticed how much it's growing lately, right? And how much research is going into just that world by the golfers, right? And that kind of seems to, you know, align with your brand a little bit as well, but you're right. It's a different golf swing. It's kind of a different world, but like we just talked about with the new model that you have coming out, it seems like it might be, you know, specific for the Justin James type of hitter. It might enhance the swing of a guy like Justin James.
100%. Because you know what, you know, if they can pick up another mile an hour in swing speed, that's 3.5 yards, yeah. three and a half yards. I mean, to them, that's the difference of, you know, it's huge. And, yeah. and, you know, of I think of most people that play golf, those guys are probably more in tune with ground force and
absolutely.
You yeah. know, I tell people, anybody who listens to me, that you should go out and when you take a lesson, get on a pressure mat. Pressure mats are, to this day, I still think they're the best piece of equipment out there for swing, you know, for analyzing a swing, because a pressure mat can tell you your distribution, weight distribution, your front foot to your left foot, the front of your foot to the back of your foot, where you are in different, they call it P1, P2, different points during the swing. They can tell you where your weight distribution is. That can measure. It can tell you where your trace line is. As you go back and as you come through, it's some of the most incredible information that I believe is little nuances that can have the greatest impact on your swing. You know, one of the things I mentioned before was this word postural control. And I can't tell you enough about that, is that the greatest difference between an amateur player and a tour pro is postural control. And postural control is your ability to control your body. So that's just a fancy terms of saying consistency. So if you can control your body consistently and repeat that time and time again, you know, people like us will go out and shoot in the front side 36 and the back will shoot 56, you know? And you know, the tour player is not going to do that. He'll go out and shoot 36-36 or, you know, 28-39, whatever it is, you know? But again, it's their ability to control their body. And that all begins with balance and stability. And that's the thing that we did. Our mission statement is this, our premise. If I can improve your balance and stability, you will hit the ball farther and straighter.
Simple. Love that.
And that's what we do with our footwear.
Yeah. It's clean. It's a good mission statement, man. I love that.
Yep.
Jake, you go ahead, jump in there if you got one more.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Before we wrap up, and like, obviously, I want to hear the details on the new stuff, like, you know, release date, pricing, colors, all that stuff. That'd be great. But I've been thinking in my head this whole time, just like the way we talked about the spikes earlier, and like this is just so fresh in my mind, obviously, because I'm partnering with Soft Spikes this year, and like, so it's just I think about it way more often than I should. I'm trying to figure out the right way to phrase this. Is there any danger in a player switching to a different spike from a characteristic of like how you designed the shoe? Is there a way that changing those six spikes out could actually mess up like how you have researched and designed and engineered that shoe? Or is it is it safe? Like, that's never a, that's not a question I've ever even asked. Or like, is it just safe for people to try out different spikes and play whatever ends up being comfortable for them?
Yeah, no, I can't. Let's just say known entities. Like, if I was going to take all of soft spikes and put them in and take them out, I don't think, you know, there'd be no change, I think. You know, I've played around with different spikes and played in them, checked cushioning, checked traction, checked a lot of, and I didn't see, I just, at some point you've got to choose one, and there could be little nuances that you appeal to you, but I don't see much differences in performance if I was to change them out. No.
Well, I think it's like we've kind of noted a couple different topics where it's like more of the very elite players in the world may notice those types of things and those little nuances like you're mentioning there, Bob. I don't know if I don't know if there's
no question
aside from it being like maybe extremely wet or extremely dry, even like we as a, you know, a regular golfer, we might not notice that as much. So, but yeah, I know where you're going with that question, Jake. Like, is that such a, because it is such a specifically designed pattern, if you're changing it, is it going to adjust like the playability of the shoe, right?
Well, and that's, yeah, like my thought there is like, you know, you look at adjustable drivers when those started coming out and, you know, I encourage people to mess with those adjustments, but like, there's also, you know, there's an asterisk on that encouragement because like, hey, like, you might make an adjustment there that's going to make it worse, right? Like there's ways to make that driver worse in your hands because of an adjustment you made. So it was just, I was like, man, I wonder if that's anything. I was assuming, right? Like with the research behind the spikes and stuff, like I know very well that obviously like there's different types of spikes sold because they do have differences, right? But like, it's the same thing as, you know, why is the Honda Accord over the Honda Civic a different vehicle, right? Like it's that kind of comparison where like, it's not crazy different, but like the right person will notice the nuances. And it's the same thing as, you know, different technologies throughout golf of like, when the right person makes the right change, that's when you understand why that other product exists, right? Like that's the point there. So that's cool. It was just a random thought.
No, it's a great question. I don't think I've ever been asked that before, but I'm just trying to work through everything in my head and there's nothing that would change. No. And you know, the other thing too, there's two other points I'd make on this is that if people do their homework, traction and dispersion, you know, distance, dispersion, all play into traction. You know, there's studies done. There was a Pinehurst study done by Soft Spikes many years ago, and they tested spikeless versus a spike shoe. And, you know, they were seeing about 5 or 6 yards of distance gains or losses if you were changing to a spikeless shoe. And when I say spikeless, I'm referring to a non-removable cleat. So.
Yeah. Mac, I'm just fully admitting this up front. If you want to clip this for me, because I'm going to be a sponsor whore right now. So here's those stats that he's talking about.
Perfect.
Right. There's those stats. That's actually what got me hooked on this whole thing, right? Because I'm also a person that like will immediately call out stats and be like, all right, what testing parameters did you use to make those stats happen or whatever, right? And that was the dispersion thing. I'm so glad you brought that up. The dispersion thing to me was so killer because it makes a lot of logical sense that you're able to swing the club faster if you feel more attached to the ground and you're using the ground better, right? Like that for a lot of people, very easy to understand. But for people to understand, and I wrote what you said down, the postural control thing. I'm going to use that in a bunch of stuff. Thank you for that. But like the consistency of how you're able to move the body through the golf swing and your ability to use the ground to accomplish that is like my final connection of what I've been searching for to talk about the dispersion gains that you also get out of spiked versus spikeless, which is super cool. So I'm so glad you said that because it was like the final connection point for me on that
topic. And it's, you know, distance and accuracy is determined by a weight distribution. It's determined distance and accuracy is because if your arms follow your body, then the only way that your dispersion is going to be is because your body is oriented in a position, whether it's the weight is too much in your toes, your heels, your whatever. And I take what you just said, which you're exactly right, is that everything emanates from the ground. It is the, in your interaction with the ground, if you just draw a box around that place, that's where it all happens. And if you don't have that, now I want to bring up one last point. And so 2 weeks ago, well, about a little over a year ago, we took the very same design. And all we did is we changed the traction pattern on the bottom of the shoe and we created baseball shoes. And so for the last almost year and a half, we've had shoes out in test market in the world of baseball. And we now have over 80 Major League Baseball players training in our shoe. And about 10 months ago, the American College of Ankle and Foot Surgeons Association, they did a study on the performance of footwear, baseball shoes on the baseball players. And we were one of the test subjects. It was our shoes against everybody else's. And I will send you this study when we're done. But yeah, please. They proved that in over 60% of the players showed an increase in exit velocity of over 2 miles an hour. Now, exit velocity is how fast the ball comes off the bat. And for every 1 mile an hour, it's about 10 feet of distance. So all they did was change their shoes. That's it. And they saw the increases of over 2 miles an hour, 60% and over 2 miles an hour exit velocity. So that's a medical study. That's medical study. So if people don't think footwear makes a difference in sports, they're wrong. And, you know, it's your only connection to the ground.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think people...
Sorry, go ahead, Jake.
I think the most you talk about footwear usually is in running sports, right? Like soccer, footwear is heavily, heavily talked about. Basketball, footwear is heavily, heavily talked about. But, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, baseball, obviously, like, the dude's got to move, they got to run, they got to field. But you don't hear about footwear that often in mm-hmm. baseball. Football, like, you hear about it, but you don't hear about it the way that we're talking about it,
nope,
right?
Like,
you hear
about it.
No, like, mostly somebody football. Wore two different colored cleats, and now they're getting fine.
Yeah, like, mostly, like, what the only thing you hear about in football is that it got lighter, right? Yeah. Like, that's all I ever hear about a football cleat.
Right.
So, no, that's incredible. I'm a... Yeah. The one thing I always get told by instructors is I use the ground well, but that's because I played soccer and baseball my whole life. So, like, I'm so used to having to work the ground, and it has helped my golf swing, right? Like, I'm 5'7" on a good day, swinging at 115, and it definitely helps.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Now, Bob, I know we ran over a bit of time here. We don't want to take up too much of your night, but I just had a quick look. All three of our teams are in the playoffs right now. So if anybody tuned in for the hockey banter here, we're all.
You know, I should be eating crow right now because I was giving you guys a good razzing the last time we're on. You know, about the Bruins, and then they get into the playoffs and they lose. You know, I was just so this year I am cautiously optimistic. I'm not saying anything.
Dude, I'm a Blackhawks fan.
Wait. Like, yeah, I just realized that after I said that. Jake's a Blackhawks fan. That was so dark. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah, buddy. That was just like, that's you so didn't weird. Have to.
You guys have Bedard. Route. Whatever. Like, get
he's
out
back
of here.
Now.
Yeah, he's back. Yeah,
I'm going to the game on. I'm going to the game on Sunday. Actually,
there you go. I went to the first Bedard's first game at the United Center, and he scored like 10 seconds in. So pretty electric player. Yeah. So I'm sorry.
He's still leading the rookie race.
I know. I don't know where I went with that.
He was out for a month.
I don't know where I was going with that. I know you're from Chicago, but whatever. I don't feel bad for you.
You did. Yeah. Okay. Here's if you just associated me with the Red Wings, then we have big problems.
No,
Definitely. And I think that's what you just did.
No, man, never, never.
You were thinking Red Wings.
Never would I ever do that.
All of our teams made the playoffs. You were 100% thinking Red Wings.
I'll never confirm or deny. But
that's Bricer's issue. Oh,
you guys, I'm telling you.
So, Bob, can we just get like a bit of a? Do you have an exact release date yet? Have you popularized that yet? Yeah.
March 1. Okay. We're going pre-sale March 1 to the public on March 1, and they're going to start shipping around the 10th to the 14th, somewhere in there.
Perfect. So this one's up about a week right before. So that's a great time. I'm going to have a link in the description in the show notes below, so you can go right over there, check out Squares Golf. If you're listening, most people listen to the pods. So if you're listening in the car, whatnot, please stop the car, whatever it is, pull over, have a look through them, place an order. What's the price point we're looking at for the new models?
So the new speed 2 is $179.
Okay.
The Pro S 2, which we didn't really talk a lot about, very clean. This is $199.
Okay.
And then the Velo is $219.
Okay.
I am very pleased to say that I had a great meeting up there in Canada. We met with Golf Town, and we're finishing up some things, but I expect to be in Canada distribution this year.
Love that. I was talking with Kyle a couple of weeks ago at the Toronto Golf Show, so I know that you guys were talking now at the PGA Show. So, looking forward to kind of getting that up here. And as always, when that pops back up, I'll go in there and knock up the display or something like that. I'll mess it up a little bit or something for you and send you some good content for it. But Bob, we always appreciate it. Always kind of appreciate the in-depth conversation about shoes, because it's not something that we get that often, which is really cool. And I know that this has been a really good one, Jake. Really appreciate your input. I know this is kind of your world right now, so
yeah, this is fun.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again sometime. Sorry we ran so late, Bob, but I appreciate
the time. Listen, it's always a pleasure. I could probably talk to you guys all night. I lost all track of time. It's enjoyable. And hey, listen, congratulations on, you know, your growth and the episodes, and you know, good things happen to good people. And, you know, if it wasn't for you guys, people like us wouldn't have a voice out there in front of golfers. So thanks for what you guys do. I really appreciate it.
You heard it here first. David Duval would not be with Squares if it wasn't for the pod, right? Pretty much.
That's just what I said.
That's probably where.
I heard that word for word.
Yeah but pretty much verbatim. But no, Bob, same to you guys, man. It's like absolutely incredible. We've been probably chatting for 3 years now, texting back and forth. It's just really great to see the success that you guys have. David Duval is one of my all time favorites. So really cool. Really cool to kind of see that working for you guys. And hopefully we hear about who these, you know, a couple of these new players might be in the next little while. So congratulations to you guys as well.
He's out in my ball and of course when I tee up, I lose a ball and I re-up. I miss a fairway, I probably end up in the ocean or maybe the beach, and I'm on a par 5 and I'm finna go reach it. Second was blind, I ain't see it. Feel like it might be an albatross, worst case scenario.